I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. Bernie Sanders supporters, what are you going to do now? Tonight, Bernie Sanders will be giving a speech, Where Do We Go From Here, at the Town Hall on West 43rd Street in New York. And our guest this hour has had conversations with more than a dozen Bernie Sanders supporters, either disillusioned with or apathetic toward politics before his campaign. He energized them, she writes, unlike any candidate before. Now they either resign themselves to voting for Hillary or redirect their efforts to local campaigns or drop out again. The Bernie or Bust Quinnipiac University poll from late May did find that three-quarters of Sanders supporters would vote for Clinton if it came down to a Clinton-Trump race. If you supported Bernie Sanders, and we anticipate that he will give his support to Hillary Clinton tonight, but who knows, maybe he won't, what are you doing now? 800-486-8655 is our number, and we sure would love to hear from you. Our guest is Emma Roller. She's a staff correspondent for National Journal. Before that, she worked at Slate. Her work has appeared in the New Republic, National Public Radio, the Journal of Higher Education, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She graduated from UW-Madison, where she served as editor-in-chief of the Daily Cardinal, and she is our guest this hour as we talk about Bernie Sanders. And we thank you very much, Emma, for joining us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Kathleen.
Our pleasure. So, you're another Madison graduate.
I am. I'm a Madison grad and a Milwaukee native, so it's great to be on WPR.
Very nice to have you here, and I'm glad you're a Milwaukee native as well. So Bernie is giving an address tonight. Do you have any inside information as to what he's going to say?
I don't have any inside information, but it's clearly going to be a speech where he is outlining where he sees this movement he has sort of catalyzed going from here. It's unclear how explicit he'll be in putting his support behind Hillary Clinton. Reports I've seen have said that he is probably not going to drop out. I suspect that he's going to, at least formally, stay in the race through the convention so he can continue to exert pressure on the Clinton campaign and on the DNC to push for more progressive reforms on the national platform.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about those reforms as we carry on. You talk about the Sanders campaign having had a galvanizing effect for many people on social media and in real life. How many people and how galvanizing has it been?
So it's hard to put an exact number on how many people the Sanders campaign has galvanized, but, you know, just in researching this story that I wrote for the New York Times a couple weeks ago, there are a lot of people who were totally disillusioned with politics, who may, you know, be smart, engaged individuals in other areas of public life, but for whatever reason, party politics just did not, just turn them off, and they felt either apathetic or, like I said, disillusioned. Bernie Sanders comes along, 74-year-old, Democratic socialist from Vermont, and he really inspired a lot of people, clearly, especially among millennials and younger voters, which Bernie Sanders won in the primaries as a demographic by huge margins over Hillary Clinton.
He sure did.
Especially in the New Hampshire primary, you saw, I think he won close to 90% of, 18 to 30-year-old voters, which is just an insane margin for any primary.
Mm-hmm. Let's start with, this is somebody you evidently went to school with, Charles France, and you write in the Times piece, when he was in college, he really didn't care about politics, and now you're quoting him as saying it has permanently made him more politically engaged. It has changed his life. He's given money, and he is involved.
Yeah, so this is probably the most personal example that I give in the story. I have this friend, Charles, who I've known since I was 18 years old. And, you know, he's one of these people. He's my age. He's 27. He is a very smart guy, also very funny and interested in culture and news. But I never knew him to be interested in politics or just sort of dismissive of it. And then over the past month, being Facebook friends with him, I noticed, at first sort of the slow links to Young Turks videos, and eventually it was like every day he was posting something positive about the Bernie Sanders campaign, links to his speeches and photos from rallies in New York where Charles lives. So I talked to him for this story, and you know, he's started volunteering with his local neighborhood Bernie Sanders pro Bernie Sanders group. He phone banked. He has donated the maximum $2,700 to the Sanders campaign, and he just, as he told me, he just loves him. He loves Bernie Sanders, and it's really when you talk to some of these supporters, you can tell it's really a personality thing. It's about the issues, but it's also about Bernie Sanders himself and his consistency and his irascibility as a candidate that has really drawn some of these supporters in.
I was interested how many of those you interviewed expressed interest, and some have already declared that they're going to run for office themselves.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So this is going to be the really, I think, most interesting thing to be watching, aside from however the presidential election plays out, is where do all of these activated, newly political people go after this election? As one of the people I talked to for this piece told me, her name is Anoa Changa, and she is a volunteer for a new group called Brand New Congress, which was started by two former Sanders campaign staffers to try to get more progressive candidates to run for Congress, because obviously, you know, the House of Representatives and Senate are both Republican-controlled. And what she told me is that they need to find a way to get people excited, not just about voting in the presidential election every 4 years. You have to get involved in local politics. You have to pay attention to what your city council is doing, what your state legislature is doing, what your governor is doing. Turn out to vote in the midterm elections. And yes, run for office yourself if you feel comfortable being in the public spotlight for that. So that seems, I mean, it's unclear how successful that will be at this point, but it's certainly going to be fascinating to watch.
Talk about some of the things that are happening over the summer. There's a Sanders supporters event, the People's Summit in Chicago. When is that happening?
Yes, so that actually already happened.
Oh,
that
it did?
Right, that was last weekend. There was this weekend-long summit called the People's Summit down in Chicago. I would love to hear from some callers, if any callers listening happen to attend, but it was all about the same thing, sort of galvanizing not just, you know, the support for Bernie Sanders, but the support for this whole slate of progressive issues, from climate change to campaign finance reform to Wall Street regulation. And I think there was also some in-services for people who wanted to go to Philadelphia to protest the actual convention, the Democratic convention in July. So it was sort of a tutorial session for Sanders supporters and other progressives to, you know, brainstorm where they go from here.
Certainly some of the issues that you just mentioned that have been important to the supporters have been around for a while. Was it the unique nature of Bernie Sanders, who he is, how long he's been in the Senate, what his politics are, that made all these people gather into a movement? Why didn't they do so before?
Right. Well, I think that is a really great question. And we're at this very interesting point in time in American politics where things are very polarized. Republicans and Democrats really do not see eye to eye in the same way that they did 20 years ago. And we've seen that on the right with the Tea Party movement, and we are now seeing it on the left. A Bernie Sanders supporter I spoke with in Pennsylvania outside of one of his rallies said, you know, we're the new Tea Party. Obviously, they have completely flipped party platform from the Tea Party, but it's the same sort of grassroots movement and excitement. And I think what has drawn people into Bernie Sanders specifically is his consistency, especially when you compare him to Hillary Clinton, just seeing where he has been on these issues, you know, from gay rights to Wall Street regulation to anti-interventionist foreign policy. He has pretty much been in the same place politically for the past 30 plus years, and it's sort of the case that he hasn't moved along with the political spectrum. The political spectrum has sort of moved toward him, if that makes sense, and, mm-hmm. and moved toward some of his more progressive ideas. So I think that's what appeals to a lot of his supporters.
So you really believe that, and we will ask people who are in Chicago, there might be some listening, to tell us what happened mm-hmm. there, that there will be a movement, because one of the people you interviewed said the Democratic Party could use some help in the enthusiasm department. The mm-hmm. lack of enthusiasm has allowed Republicans to dominate, and indeed they have, state houses across the country. Do you think that there will be enough people who will be actively engaged and enough candidates for all of these people to vote for that will kind of turn the tide to a more progressive era?
Sure. Well, that's sort of the critical question. And, you know, this is even sort of a recent phenomenon in state houses across the country. I believe since 2009, more than 900 state legislative seats across the country have flipped from Democrat to Republican. Obviously, I don't have to tell Wisconsin listeners that, you know, Wisconsin is one of those states that is now solidly a Republican state house, and redistricting has contributed to that. But the question of recruitment is a real one, and it's unclear how many people who are ardent Sanders supporters now are going to be willing to take that extra step and say, you know what, I really think that I need to make my own change where I live and run for state assembly, run for state senate, run for city council, whatever, what have you.
Talk about this young lawyer in Atlanta who is mm-hmm. working with brand new Congress.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So her name is Anoa Changa. I mentioned her earlier, but she is part of this new group called Brand New Congress that was founded by two former Sanders campaign staffers that is aiming to recruit new member or new candidates to run for Congress on a progressive platform. And they're sort of mimicking what the Sanders campaign did. They're starting off with a 100-city barnstorming tour, which is the same way that Bernie Sanders started his own presidential campaign, to sort of gin interest across the country and you know, show Sanders supporters, look, this isn't over just because Hillary Clinton will most likely be the Democratic nominee doesn't mean that we have to abandon all of these issues that Bernie Sanders has brought to the fore and been championing on the campaign trail.
And do you think Sanders, he's got a job in the Senate certainly, but do you think that he will keep organizing these millions of people who have supported him? Will there be some kind of organization set in place by the Sanders campaign?
Well, there already has been a little bit. So if any listeners want to go to BernieSanders.com/win, the Sanders campaign is seemingly trying to recruit supporters to, you know, become more politically active. And it's basically a sign up and you can say, are you interested in running for office or volunteering for someone at a more local level running for office? And according to the Sanders campaign, they got interest from almost 11,000 supporters within the first 24 hours of launching this website. People who expressed interest in either running for office themselves or volunteering for another Sanders supporter who might run for office. So that it's obviously going to be hard probably for Senator Sanders himself to continue this work, considering he has his own job in the Senate. But between that and what Brand New Congress is doing, what the People's Summit is trying to do, it seems like there's sort of the wave of interest is starting to crest.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is the author of a piece that appeared in the New York Times earlier in June, Life After Bernie, and she interviewed a number of young people who have been ardent Bernie supporters to find out what's next for them. And we will find out a little bit more about what's next for Bernie Sanders tonight. He's giving a speech in New York today. So a couple questions for you, particularly for you who have been Bernie Sanders supporters. What are you doing now? Will you, along with many others, according to the Quinnipiac poll, find yourselves voting for Hillary Clinton if it comes down to a Clinton-Trump race. Those who may have attended the People's Summit in Chicago were very interested in hearing from you what you talked about. And will there be, do you think, a progressive movement that will have staying power now as a result of the Bernie Sanders' very successful campaign, not in winning the nomination, but in getting millions of people to support progressive politics? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, where we'd love to get your messages. And we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, to your phone calls. Many of them are coming in now. We go to Tony in Athens first. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Kathleen. I love the show, and I love the topic. I was an enthusiastic Bernie Sanders supporter. I will be voting for Hillary Clinton, not because of the choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. To me, that is obvious. Hillary Clinton is in a much better place on the political spectrum. And the problem is Bill Clinton's record and Clinton's record. Is she's center-right. You know, Bill Clinton, to me, is NAFTA and the crime bill and Monica Lewinsky jokes. You know, he's not a very progressive Democrat. And so I fear that from my political perspective, I'm moving the country in the wrong direction, but I'm obviously going to vote for her. You know, although I'm intrigued by Donald Trump, not because of what he's been saying, but because he's blowing up Republican code. And he's just calling that out and wreaking havoc with the Republican Party.
Tony, do you see Hillary Clinton's politics as very similar to her husband's?
I see her as a hawkish, you know, center-right Democrat within the spectrum of the Democratic Party. And so, and not much of a vision other than representing the first woman president, which would be very powerful to me.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. Emma?
Yeah, Tony, thank you for your call. I think, obviously, that's going to be something that Hillary Clinton will have to contend with going into November, especially you mentioned Donald Trump and NAFTA. Trade is one area where he really has the upper hand in that he's been railing against NAFTA, railing against the TPP. And Hillary Clinton, you know, Bernie Sanders sort of pushed her over the line on the TPP to oppose something she had once supported, that trade deal. So I won't be surprised if Donald Trump continues to hit her for supporting free trade policies in the past.
He sent out an email today to many of his supporters talking about the issues that he wants to continue working on, criminal justice, of course, climate change, one of them, and of course, this talk about inequality in the middle class and the working class just not being able to make ends meet, getting three jobs, et cetera. So he's going to stay on these issues. He's been outlining them during the course of his whole campaign.
Right. And he's been emphasizing them throughout the whole course of the campaign. It's hard to tell, you know, how much of it is his own, you know, platform and how much of it he wants to disseminate toward, you know, to trickle down to the rest of the country to get other progressives inspired to emphasize these issues when they run for president. But he's certainly activated a lot of people politically who weren't necessarily active before.
Matt is next on the road. Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Hey.
There's a lot of us that have been progressives for a long time, and I'm one of those people. There was Eugene McCarthy, and then my first election was voting for George McGovern, and my issue was just like today. It was stopping the Vietnam War, and I was vehemently in favor of stopping it, and I was disillusioned greatly when McGovern only got the state of Massachusetts and lost 49 other states, including Wisconsin. And so I think it's very important that the Bernie supporters of today take a history lesson from the past and make sure that you listen carefully to what Bernie has to say this summer at the Democratic Convention, and make sure that you just don't blow it off and vote for Trump. because on the issue of climate change, there is no comparison between Trump and Clinton. She is far, far, far closer to Bernie, and obviously Donald Trump is a climate change denier. On the issue of women and children, Hillary Clinton has a full lifetime of supporting women's rights and empowering women and also supporting children, and not just in the United States, but worldwide. She has a very strong record on that, and it's often overlooked. So those are just a couple of many issues that I could bring up. But it's important not to just blow off what Bernie has to say. Listen carefully, and if he supports Hillary Clinton, I think it's important for most people to realize that the only realistic chance of winning is Hillary Clinton in becoming president.
Thanks, Matt, for your call. Emma.
Yes, Matt, I think that's a really smart point. And, you know, there since Hillary Clinton clinched the primary, there's been this hashtag that's, I guess I'm with her, you know, people who are grudgingly, you know, maybe Sanders supporters, but recognize the political reality of what a Donald Trump presidency would represent. And I think your George McGovern comparison is really apt because, you know, people tend to treat young people, young voters, as this new trend every cycle, it seems like, or this new trend story. But it's important to remember that that anti-war, young, progressive block of voters was just as active in the 70s. And who knows what today's millennials will think about this election, you know, 30 years down the line.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the people you interviewed were young, 35 and under, but there are a number of people who are a bit older who are Bernie Sanders supporters as well, right? People like Matt.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And especially, you know, if you go up to Vermont and speak to older people in Vermont, Bernie Sanders is a legend there, and it's why he won the Vermont and New Hampshire primaries handily, because he's a really revered political figure there. And I think in pockets of the country, like I would argue Milwaukee and Madison and Chicago, you know, there are strong progressive traditions in all of those places. And I'm sure there are a lot of adult voters who have been waiting for a candidate like Bernie Sanders to emerge on the national stage for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mary next, who is in Milwaukee. Hello, Mary.
Good afternoon. I'm just wondering, why not a write-in campaign for Bernie Sanders?
Is that what you plan to do?
Well, I'm really teetering with it because I really support Bernie, not a big Hillary fan, obviously will not vote for Trump, but, I mean, everybody's crabbing about not being able to support Bernie, but that's one way to do it. So.
How many people you interviewed felt that way, Emma?
Sure. So it was a swath of people. I actually interviewed Ethan Keller, who is a musician in Milwaukee and a really strong Bernie Sanders supporter. He actually opened for one of Bernie's rallies at the Wisconsin State Fairgrounds. And he told me that he would write in Bernie in the fall. He told me Bernie's the one that earned my vote, not a party, but Bernie is the one who earned his vote. So I think you will see people writing in his name. Another option for people who really can't bring themselves to vote for Hillary Clinton is Jill Stein with the Green Party. You know, most voters don't know who she is, but then again, most voters didn't know who Bernie Sanders was a year and a half ago.
A Facebook message from Rebecca. Do you think Bernie could be vice president, or even if offered, would he never do that?
I think if he were offered to be running mate for Hillary Clinton, I don't see why he would turn that down. That's a great opportunity. But I don't think that the Clinton campaign is going to extend that offer to him for one reason or another. You know, there might be too much bad blood from the primary. I personally think it would be a very smart political to do that, or someone like Elizabeth Warren, but it's looking like the Clinton campaign might go with someone safer, like a Tim Kaine, who is a senator from Virginia and relatively moderate, or Cory Booker, a senator from New Jersey. Another option is
I've heard
Sherrod Brown in Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah, who is, it would seem to me as though she's got to reach into the more progressive wing of the Democratic Party, doesn't she, to get the Bernie voters, to get all of those issues front and center that he campaigned on?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see it. I mean, I think it might be seen as sort of dismissing this whole huge movement of voters if she were to choose someone who aligns with her in being a more centrist Democrat. But then again, it's her campaign, and maybe she wants to be with someone who she feels like she really aligns with politically, and she figures people are going to vote against Donald Trump when push comes to shove.
Abraham in Green Bay, hi.
Hello, Kathleen. So I wanted to point out that I'll not be voting in the federal election this fall, and I'll be focusing on the local elections. And one reason is, you know, I really have no problem with voting for Hillary, you know, if she won fair and square. But, you know, we live in a country where in the supposed Democratic Party, nearly 400 delegates voted for, well, at least indicated that they, you know, will be voting for her before anybody, you know, was on the ballot. You know, we have that same party that has been rigging the election process from the beginning, you know, which constantly, you know, talks about voter fraud, but, you know, on the other hand, commits election fraud. And, you know, they have made a statement to us, the people, that it doesn't matter to them, you know, whoever we vote for, you know, whoever they want in the, you know, in the office will be the person that they pick, and have made it very, very clear that, you know, it's a private, you know, party. If you're not invited, if you invite yourself, you know, we'll let you in. But, you know, that does not mean that just because everybody else and you know, that signs up for the club wants you, that the power structure is gonna let you through and you know, get where the people want you to get.
Emma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that has certainly been a big point of contention with this primary, is how the Democratic National Committee has structured all of this. Probably the most interesting part of that internal power struggle was when Tulsi Gabbard left the DNC and came out as a Bernie Sanders supporter. I think that you know, earned her a lot of respect among the progressives who support Sanders. But you're right, this whole idea of superdelegates has been really fomenting, and it's one of those things where it seems like every election cycle, it's like, well, why do we have these, you know, sort of secretive elite members of the party who get to, you know, change their minds whenever they want and throw their support behind one candidate or the other as sort of like an indicator or what have you of what candidate to support. There's also been criticism of closed primaries, you know, having primaries where only registered Democrats can vote. There have been frustrated Sanders supporters who either haven't been able to change their party registration in time or didn't want to register as a Democrat for one reason or another. And there's an argument to be made there about whether political independents should be able to participate in those primaries.
Mm-hmm. Will the subject of superdelegates be discussed? Is that a given at the Democratic Convention, or there will have to be a fight to have that discussed?
I certainly think that Bernie Sanders supporters who are trying to make that an issue will try to bring it up. It might not be inside the convention hall, but perhaps outside of it. And I think that the DNC will probably do whatever it can to make the Democratic Party appear to be one happy family after this primary at the convention. But that is yet to be seen.
What do you think is going to happen outside the hall, Emma?
Well, there's going to be protests, and that's, you know, what the part of what the People's Summit was about was, you know, training pro-Sanders supporters and other progressives who take issue with how the primary has played out to go to Philadelphia and basically protest the results of the primary. So I think that'll be really interesting to watch. Probably not as interesting as Cleveland, but there's going to be protests at both conventions.
Right. Who knows what's going to happen in Cleveland? Really? Who knows at this point?
Yeah. I'm going to have to, I don't know, maybe buy some riot gear. I'm not sure. I'm going to be going.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be fascinating to report on it, that's for sure. Abraham, thanks for the call. Gary in Madison. Hi.
Yeah, hi. I have just a couple of comments to make. And, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, Mrs. Clinton did win rather decisively. My point in an answer to one of your first callers about Bill Clinton, you know, I remember that presidency, and I never made so much money as I did in my life during the Clinton presidency. We had peace for 8 years, and he left our treasury with a huge surplus. But my real comment is my kids started out supporting Sanders, and I was so disappointed in them. I'm an old guy, and I'm a Hillary supporter. But, you know, they changed. They got on Facebook, and they saw some snotty, nasty comments that went on and on by Bernie supporters. And they said, gee, I just can't be a part of that. I'm just wondering if you ran into any of that. I'll take your comments off the air. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, well, that is another sort of narrative of this primary has been the quote-unquote Bernie bros or whatever you want to call them. And this question of online discourse, I personally have gotten, I don't want to say harassment, but negative comments from people of all shades of the political spectrum. But there has been this emerging narrative of Bernie Sanders supporters who I think tend to be more internet literate, I guess, than other, you know, Clinton supporters or Republican primary voters. So the effect of that has been taking their political passions online. And you know, sometimes that obviously comes off as not the most respectful. But I will say that Bernie Sanders has condemned that sort of talk. I mean, yeah, it's tricky.
Thanks for the call, Gary. Therese on Facebook, I'm still holding out hope that Bernie Sanders will consider running as an independent. He has the recognition for a win, he has the support for a win, and he does have the masses that are either no Trump and or no Hillary. Do you think he could successfully do an independent run? I don't think he will, but do you think he could?
I think he could wage one. Why not? There's been, you know, this... Who thought a year and a half ago, or a little more than a year ago, I suppose, that someone who self-identifies as a socialist could, you know, pull down millions of votes? And as the last caller pointed out, Hillary Clinton did win the primary pretty handily. She was her margin ahead of Bernie Sanders during the primary was always larger than Barack Obama's ahead of her in 2008. But that said, you know, this election has shown that there is support for someone who self-identifies as a socialist candidate in this country. And I think Bernie Sanders, you know, no matter what he does, this has sort of shattered the Overton window, or what have you, about, you know, what kind of candidate can run for political office successfully at a national level.
Exactly. Yeah, it sure did that. Mike in Silver Spring. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Oh, I've been waiting for this discussion for a long time. The Democratic Conservative Choir elected Hillary. Now, the congregation is who decides the president, and what I mean by that is Hillary can keep all the independents and the non-conservative Democrats out of the election, but that doesn't mean she's going to be elected president. Bill Clinton was the best Republican president the Democrats ever elected. So my point is that the way to get this superdelegate scam cleaned up is to recall what I describe them as duper delegates. The duper delegates are the people who have duped the voters into thinking that their votes counted, and it was not a fair and square primary. So my goal is to put the political onus on the duper delegates in Wisconsin, because Hillary lost Wisconsin, so everybody should represent the voter, and recall the three duper delegates of Tammy Baldwin, Ron Kind, and Gwen Moore to let them know that we're not going to put up with this hocus pocus that Hillary has been working on for 16 years to dupe the system, because a vote should count, and Wisconsin went for Bernie, and every delegate should go to the winner and not to the people who have personal relationships with Hillary, because that's why all the Bernie people are angry, and they're mad as hell, and they deserve to be mad as hell, because Hillary had 16 years to dupe the system, and she did it, and it wasn't a fair and square election.
But she did win the popular vote, Mike.
That's the choir. That's the Democratic choir. The popular vote doesn't elect the president. The independents of Wisconsin are the ones who elect presidents. It doesn't matter if you've got the Democrats drinking the Kool-Aid. You've got to appeal to independents. And she is alienating independents, because she has what I call a condescending sexist attitude that if you don't vote for me, you must be brainwashed, or you must be stupid, or you must be dumb. And that's offensive, not just to men, but to women. So I think Hillary basically has rigged the system with the help of her husband since 1992.
All right, we got you. Emma.
I think there's sort of two different questions there, but it seems like the broader, you know, issue is who should be allowed to participate in a primary election. Obviously, you know, Republicans tend to have more closed primaries, I believe, than the Democrats do. And Republicans technically do have superdelegates, but like you said, they are tied to whoever the state ends up voting for. Whereas on the Democratic side, you have, you know, these few hundred party members, and they're, you know, they include elected officials, which is where Tammy Baldwin, Ron Kind, and Gwen Moore come in. And it also includes, you know, other Democratic activists and players in the field. Just to play devil's advocate for a second, the idea of superdelegates, I think it's a little bit overgeneralized. The idea of superdelegates, which I'm not necessarily supporting, but what the DNC says is that they have this separate classification for superdelegates so that the regular delegate system doesn't get clogged up with these party members, because otherwise you would have, you know, virtually every member of Congress running to be a delegate. And by having this separate classification of superdelegates, that allows for more grassroots party members at the state level to run to be delegates and free up space for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there is something wrong when you look at a state that went for Bernie and the delegates are all going, the superdelegates are all going another direction. And there were a lot of other states like that, too. It makes you think, wait a second, there's something that really strikes a lot of people as being wrong about that.
Sure. And I actually wrote a column about all of this a few weeks ago. If you can Google my name and superdelegates and New York Times, about how did we even get this system in the first place, right? And actually, a lot of it goes back to the 1972 election, mm-hmm. and 1976, where you saw two insurgent candidates, George McGovern in 72 and Jimmy Carter in 1976, who, you know, won the primary handily. And, you know, in the case of George McGovern, he ended up losing the general very badly, and Jimmy Carter got booted out of office 4 years later. So the purpose of the superdelegates was also the Democratic Party putting a check on insurgent candidates.
Right.
So in that way, I think that Bernie Sanders supporters definitely have a leg to stand on of saying, wait a minute, we shouldn't be hampering, you know, these insurgent candidates unnecessarily just because of electability.
Bernie Sanders supporters, what next? That's the question of this hour. And our guest is Emma Roller. She's a staff correspondent for National Journal, and she wrote a piece that we're talking about this hour, in which she interviewed quite a few young Bernie Sanders supporters to ask them what will their lives be like after Bernie, and how Bernie has made so many of them much more politically engaged. The question is it a long-lasting engagement or is it short-lived? 800-486-8655 is our number, and the email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter, and that's @KDunshow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to Randy in Madison. Next caller for you, Emma. Hi, Randy.
Hi, good afternoon. I know there's a lot at stake in this coming election, but I'm really not sure I can hold my nose long enough to vote for Clinton. But that said, I also have my reservations about St. Bernard, you know, he had 20 years and change in the Senate, and I don't know any actual accomplishment that he had. He left a very shallow footprint, and a lot of his colleagues have said the same thing. Now at the age of 70, he'll have the energy. We're supposed to say he'd have the energy to give us free college tuition and single-payer health insurance. I know you're talking more about the phenomenon than about the person, but I think that the impact will be short-lived, just as Ms. Dunn stated the question, because I think his impact has been shallow all along.
Who was your candidate, Randy, or who was your candidate?
I probably would have ended up going with Sanders, but very, very reluctantly.
This has been a bad election year for you, Randy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Emma, you want to respond to his comments?
Sure. Thanks, Randy. You know, this whole primary has gotten down to a really interesting question of ideological purity versus, you could say, willingness to get things done, pragmatism, or, you know, neoliberalism, as Sanders supporters would probably say. And I think Sanders' record is worth looking at, just as Clinton's record when she was a senator is worth looking at. He didn't really do a lot to stoke his foreign policy credentials during the primary, aside from pointing out, you know, multiple times that he did not vote for the Iraq war, unlike Hillary Clinton. But once you get past that, he sort of failed to flesh out more of a foreign policy agenda. I know that the agenda is non-interventionism, but I think that for more pragmatic liberals, that did sort of raise questions about, well, what is your record or what have you accomplished in the Senate?
And thank you very much, Randy, for your call. Let's go to Dennis in Red Granite. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Hi.
I think that it's not going to make a difference whether you elect Clinton or Trump, because I don't think the Republican Congress is going to work with either one of them. And I think the problem lies with Congress, and that's where you need changes made, such as term limits.
Sure. Yeah, that actually perfectly segues into what else I was going to say is looking forward at the future of Congress. You know, you could argue that if Bernie Sanders did become the next president, he would be in much the same position as Barack Obama is now, and the same with Hillary Clinton. That is, unless Donald Trump has a really bad election year and that trickles down to the Senate. And can possibly flip the Senate back to being Democratic. But I think that Paul Ryan and now Marco Rubio, you've seen them express somewhat tepid interest in working with Donald Trump. Probably more so Paul Ryan has a stake as the Speaker of the House of, you know, being able to promote his own agenda to the White House. But, you know, either way, I think someone like Paul Ryan is not happy no matter who wins in November.
And what's your mind telling you? Is Donald Trump going to have a really bad election year?
I don't want to say anything too definitive, because I feel like everything I have predicted about this election has gone sideways, and the same for a lot of other people. I would say that no one should underestimate Donald Trump given how much success he has had in the primary. But I will say that the general election is a completely different ball game from winning a primary election. And, you know, the electorate that is going to vote in November looks completely different from the group of voters who made Donald Trump their nominee. And depending on turnout, depending on a lot of factors, I think that could very easily, you know, give the Republicans a pretty devastating loss.
Yeah, there are millions, tens of millions more voters, many, many, many more voters who will vote in November.
Right.
Christine sends this email, contrary to what some may think, Bernie's ideas are not utopian. In fact, I've lived under his socialist policies for many years while in Germany. These ideas do work. I'm seriously thinking of doing a write-in for Bernie in November because I sincerely believe he's the best candidate, and this is the way I can make my voice heard.
Sure. Well, obviously, Bernie Sanders, that's something he has said a lot on the campaign trail, is that this brand of democratic socialism can work. If you look at countries in Scandinavia, countries in Europe, they have a very strong social or safety network, safety net, and, you know, are doing pretty well for themselves. But I think the question that that raises is, you know, how do you succeed under the two-party system that the U.S. has versus, you know, the other, you know, more parliamentary systems in Europe? And, you know, in the simple fact is that in a first-past-the-post country, electability is the number one factor that people think about. And I think that has maybe contributed to some of the polarization we've seen. But it just makes it harder to translate, I think, for a number of factors in the U.S.
Jeff in Madison, hi.
Yes, Emma Roller, I've enjoyed your articles, particularly the one this week, Can Trump Insult the Way to the White House? It was great.
Thank you.
I was an ideological purist, a little tiny bit of history, and I'll make it quick. Like your caller, Matt, before me, my first vote was for McGovern in 72. I actually ran his campaign in New York State when he briefly ran again in the primaries in 1984 for president. I abstained from voting in 1980 because I was a purist and I saw no meaningful difference between Carter, who was running up the defense budget, and Reagan, who vowed to do the same and even more. And boy, was I naive and wrong from a Democrat's point of view. And it was a mistake that I vowed after a couple of years of Reaganomics and Reagan term that to never make that mistake again. And my point, to make it short, is that is to all Democrats or Democratic-leaning independents, an abstention by a Democrat or a write-in for Bernie is tantamount to another check mark in the Trump column. That's the system. That's what we have. That's the way our system works. I will never make that mistake again, and I will listen, as always, Kathleen, off the air.
Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, and thank you for reading. I think that that is a really astute point as well. And I think the problem or the tricky part of that is that voting for Bernie or writing him in, I should say, or writing in a third-party candidate, it is the ideologically pure move, if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, to write him in or to not vote. But like you said, this is the system that we live in. Obviously, it's not a perfect system, but that is the decision that voters are going to have to make in November.
And time for one more phone call. Cole is next on the road. Hi, Cole.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the point real quick that I can't bring myself to vote for Hillary in November just because she's hawkish and she's flip-flopped so much over the past 20 years. So I will more than likely be voting for Jill Stein at the Green Party just because I don't want to come out of the voting booth feeling dirty, I guess. I want to come out feeling good about my choice, even if it could be argued that would help elect Trump.
All right.
So I'll just take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Cole. Emma, we have about 30 seconds.
Sure. I will just say that everyone should vote, and I think not voting is probably the worst thing that you can do. So I will just end that with saying exercise your Democratic privilege. Get out and vote in November, no matter who you vote for.
Thanks, Emma, so much for being with us. It was an interesting hour. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathleen.
Emma Roller, staff correspondent for the National Journal. Her piece, Life After Bernie, appeared in the New York Times. She is a graduate of UW-Madison, where she served as editor-in-chief of the Daily Cardinal. Thanks very much to KP Whaley for producing the hour and to Kiri Salinas for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We have news coming up, and when we return, we're going to be looking at happiness in the United States and this huge gap between poor whites and poor Hispanics and African Americans. Poor whites are much more stressed out and much more unhappy. We'll talk about why, and it all centers back to inequality after the news coming up next.